from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll find out about some changes coming for the Indianapolis Library Foundation.
I'll get a preview of a Central Indiana celebration of Bastille Day.
And I'll take a look at this year's early music festival. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The Indianapolis Public Library Foundation has announced that current Vice President Roberta Jaggers will step into the role of Foundation President effective January 1, 2016. At that time, current President Danny Dean will transition to Major Gifts and Donor Liaison. Travis DiNicola spoke with Roberta Jaggers to find out what this means for the Library Foundation.
Roberta, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And congratulations on your new job, which will start in January of 2016. But I know you've been with the foundation quite a long time. 13 years, is
that
right?
That's correct, yes.
Excellent. So let's start by talking about what exactly the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation is, what it does, how it does it. Because it's obviously part of the library, but it's also different and separate.
That's right. So the Library Foundation began in 1969, and we're a separate not-for-profit organization from the library, but work very closely with the library. Mm-hmm. And our role is to raise private support for library programs and services.
So you're not actually library employees, right?
No, we're foundation employees.
Foundation employees. And so and basically what you're doing is raising money for things that are sort of above and beyond what the library normally does. Is that right?
Exactly. So obviously the library has a very substantial budget funded through tax dollars primarily for mm-hmm. operations. But then if they want to go above and beyond that and do some things that add a margin of excellence to what they're doing, that's where the foundation could come in to really help. So a really great example of this is our summer reading program. Right now the library is running its summer reading program. It's one of the largest summer reading programs in the country with nearly 60,000 participants.
Wow.
And the Library Foundation raises about $225,000 a year for the program from donors from throughout the community.
That's great. That's great. So, I mean, a lot of the things that the library sort of does and is known for are actually things that the foundation is supporting.
Yeah, there are a lot of things out there. The early literacy work that we're doing, we were able to get the early literacy specialist position endowed thanks to a generous gift from the Herbert Simon Family Foundation. And we've raised a lot of funding for library programs in that area as well. Our Job Center, which is our signature initiative for individuals who need support with their job search, through access to technology and personalized
sure.
help. That's another one. And then another popular program is the Marion McFadden Memorial Lecture, which
features
a high-profile author every year. We fund that as well.
Absolutely. So about how much funding does the foundation provide the library average on an annual basis?
Sure. About $2 million a year.
Wow.
Which is roughly 80% of the library's programming budget.
80% of the programming
mm-hmm.
budget.
And then next year, the library has asked the Library Foundation to provide an additional $300,000 per year on top of what we're already doing, which would be an amount equal to 100% of the library's programming budget. And that's part of the library's financial plan for operating its expanded facilities that are coming mm-hmm. on board through our capital projects.
And about how much of the program budget is, do you know, a percentage of the library's total budget?
Well, I don't know the percentage off the top of my head, mm-hmm. but their budget is in the 30 to 40 million range.
Sure. Okay.
So 2 million is a, you know, you can kind of gauge based on that, what the percentages.
And so basically, I mean, these are programs that people really have come to love and expect mm-hmm. and look forward to and serve a lot of different needs in the community, as you said, whether it's summer reading or workforce assistance in helping get people jobs or the lectures. These are programs that pretty much wouldn't be able to exist otherwise, right?
That's correct. We really thank all of the donors who've helped make these programs possible.
So, I mean, you must have a lot of donors. I mean, how does that all work for you? I mean, people who just love books and libraries and...
Well, we go after contributions in a lot of ways. We go after grants. We go after corporate gifts. We have a mailing to individuals who want to give as well. And we call those individuals who are donors friends of the library.
Mm-hmm.
People can give online. That's the easiest way to give now. And, you know, we go after plain giving. We have an annual event, the Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana Authors Award. So it just takes lots of different bobs in the water and lots of different strategies to help us meet our goal.
And the book sales, too, are that part of it as well?
The book sales, yes. Thank you for reminding me of that. Our book sale that the library has several times a year, the proceeds of that go to the Library Foundation to help support library programs.
Excellent. Well, one of my favorite events each year is the Eugene Marilyn Glick Indiana Authors Award. And that's been going on now for about how many years?
Started in 2009.
Okay. And it's a great way to recognize both well-established Indiana authors and authors who are part of Indiana history and such, as well as new and emerging authors. That's a pretty exciting event each year. And I think you just closed the application process, right,
for
the coming year, because the next awards ceremony will be this fall.
Yes, October 10th.
And tell me a bit about that, the awards for that.
Well, we just have really enjoyed it. It's just been a tremendous asset for the Library Foundation to have it. So we have a voluntary award panel that adjudicates the award. It's public nominations. And so we'll be announcing our winners and finalists in July. And then on the Library Foundation side, in addition to adjudicating the award panel, our board of directors in particular and our staff work very hard at securing table sponsorships. And so our board has just been extraordinarily supportive of this and helping us make connections there. And then we have staff who work to plan all the details, and then we put on a great show for the community on October 10th. And we have a couple of different elements to the day.
Yeah.
There's the public programming, which is a free programming for anybody who's interested in Indiana authors or in writing. And we have that at Central Library. So you can come and learn how to write a book or meet your favorite Indiana author, that sort of thing. And then we have a ticketed award dinner that evening. And that's the fundraiser for the Library Foundation.
And you've had some great recipients in the past.
We have. We've had James Alexander Tom. We've had, and I'm going to embarrass myself and not name everybody, Margaret McMullen. Dan Wakefield, some of the emerging, those are some of the most heartwarming examples. And one person that I will always remember when he won the award was Greg Schwipps. He's a professor at DePauw. He wrote a book, and he actually he was very emotional when he received his award. And the nicest part about his presentation was that his mother is a volunteer at the Milan Public Library, and they had just started their library. And he actually chose to give his hometown a grant, because every winner gets a grant to give to their public library.
Right, I was going to ask you about that. That's a really unique element of this, is that as part of their award, they get funds that they can then give to the library of their choice within Indiana. It doesn't have to be an Indianapolis library.
It can be anywhere, as you said,
where his mom was.
So when he was able to share that with his mother, that was very, very special. And then it turned out that the publisher that he was working with no longer existed, but because of the relationship through the Indiana Authors Award, IU Press picked his book up, and it looks even better than it did before.
Oh, that's awesome. It's a great story,
and we really just want to say thank you so much to the Glick family for making that program possible.
Well, it's a great celebration of Indiana authors and Indiana literary history and our current Indiana literary scene. So let me ask you about your new job and what this means, because you, as I said earlier, have been at the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation for 13 years, Roberta, and that you are currently in the role of vice president, and starting on January 1st will be the new foundation president. And that's a change, because Danny Dean has been president of the foundation for, it seems like ever to a lot of people.
22 years. He was the first staff member hired by the foundation, actually.
Okay, that's pretty amazing. And Danny's still going to be involved with the organization.
Happily,
he's not
yes.
retiring. He's just sort
he's
of
not retiring.
Changing a bit.
And I think that's wonderful news for our Library Foundation and for our community. What he's doing is he's going to transition into a role called Major Gifts and Donor Liaison. So he's going to really be able to focus on the things he really loves the most, which is fundraising, working with donors, connecting them to the library's mission. Mm-hmm. He'll be my call-a-friend. If I ever need anything, I can call him and he can give me some advice. So
that's
I'm excited
nice
about that aspect of it. And, you know, I think it will just mean increased capacity for the Library Foundation and more fundraising for the library to meet our goals going forward.
So what does that mean for you? How does your role at the foundation change?
Well, I'm going to be just stepping into a role with more responsibility, obviously, and just responsibility for oversight of all areas of the foundation. You know, since I've been vice president, I've been overseeing the development operations, but now I'll be overseeing the person overseeing the development operations, mm-hmm. plus also our other side of our business is our you know, business side, so our finances,
sure.
our investments, our accounting, our human resources, and we have really talented staff members and board members with expertise in that area. So
excellent.
I'm working hard at getting up to snuff on all of those areas. I have been for years to try to just make the best contribution I can.
Well, it's very exciting. And it seems like a great way to make a transition like this when you have a leader like Danny who's been in this position for so long and I mean, really since the beginning, and to be able to keep him involved but also have you know, such a significant amount of crossover time mm-hmm. for this transition.
Yeah.
That's quite unusual.
Well, you know, we saw another organization do this, and mm-hmm. that was where we got the idea. And I just know a big issue for not-for-profits, especially not-for-profits, is the leadership transition. And the people who are the baby boomers are looking to move into a different role or retire altogether. And then you have the people my age, the Xers and the cuspers and the millennials. I'm sort of in between the two, mm-hmm. come up. And that we can have access to mentors and keep our mentors and have the opportunity to have our shot to lead is really cool. So
sure.
I would really hope that other organizations would consider this kind of transition.
Yeah, it seems like a great model. So have you begun to think about, I mean, you have a great legacy to carry on, but obviously you're then put your own stamp on it.
Mm-hmm.
And have you begun to think about what that might look like or
yes.
things that you would like to implement in your new role?
On a very high level, I mean, first of all, obviously I want to follow our strategic plan.
Mm-hmm.
I want to follow our commitment to the library to increase support for programs. We are going to be doing an information campaign starting next year to really educate more people in the community about the Library Foundation.
Sure.
Find a lot of people don't really know.
Yeah.
Who we are and what we do and how they can help us. So we want to really work on that. And then as I think about new ideas, I mean, I'm fortunate to be stepping into a position of such a well-run organization. But, you know, I think that the power of the Library Foundation is in our ability to enrich lives, not just the lives of the people we're serving through library programs, but also mm-hmm. our donors and our volunteers and our staff. And I see my role as the foundation president be thinking really creatively in my own mind and then with other people, what can we be doing to enrich the lives of people more?
Sure.
And that's kind of, I just see that as strengthening our ecosystem of support, if you
mm-hmm.
will. And I think that our success for bringing in the advocacy support and the financial support for the foundation will rest in our ability to really do this. So that's the genesis for new ideas that I'll have going forward.
That's exciting. That's very exciting, especially, you know, bringing more visibility to the foundation and what the foundation does. Because I agree. I think that's something that a lot of people sort of get a little confused about or aren't quite mm-hmm. clear how it works with the library. But, you know, as we were talking earlier about the different programs that the foundation supports through the library, they're so significant
mm-hmm.
to what the library does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We work really closely with them on every dollar that we send over for a library program to the library. We track and we get
mm-hmm.
a report on. So there's a lot of accountability, and a big part of our job is that stewardship. So, you know, we're a fundraising organization and we're also a grant making organization. So think about those two functions, and we combine them at the foundation.
Excellent. Well, it's wonderful to have you on Art of the Matter today, Roberta. And again, thanks so much for the work that you do through the Library Foundation, and best of luck with your new role.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be here.
Travis DiNicola with Roberta Jaggers, currently the vice president of the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation, who will become the foundation president on January 1st, 2016. For more information about the Library Foundation, visit indieplfoundation.org, indieplfoundation.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
native French woman, Gabrielle Hendricks Parker, her husband Calvin Hendricks Parker, and their friend Carol Gans want you to remember that the Americans and the French have a shared love for liberty. They are the chief organizers of Central Indiana's 6th annual Bastille Day celebration, which takes place in Fortville's Landmark Park from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. on July 11th, the closest Saturday to Bastille Day. Sharon Gamble found out more.
I'm so sorry to have to ask this, but you know somebody's driving along, just heard us introduced and said, I used to know what Bastille Day was about. I don't remember what it commemorates. I'm going to look at the lady with the most credential, and you'll understand when she speaks why she has the credentials to speak about this. Gabrielle,
yeah,
remind us.
Sure. The Bastille Day celebration is basically the French National Day. And it's a celebration of the start of the French Revolution when the people in Paris stormed the Bastille prison in Paris in 1789, and which started really all the revolution events at that time. And so since then, every year, Bastille Day is celebrated in France. It's usually on July the 14th. But here we're trying to have as many visitors as possible, so we hold the event on the closest Saturday.
That makes perfect sense. And in fact, you know, the United States and France had a lot of alliances back and forth between for our each of our revolutions.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of mixed culture between France and America since in that time. Because you had your revolution right there, your Indian War right before. There were people who came from America to France and vice versa, like Lafayette and Washington and Benjamin Franklin. All those people like went back and forth and carried with them the ideas of liberty and freedom and equality and all of this.
And how did you end up in the U.S.?
Really by chance. I was hired by a company on the West Coast where I actually met Calvin, my husband. And we started our company, 6 Feet Up, and we decided to move it to Indiana, where Calvin is from. And that was 2003.
Mm-hmm. And 6 Feet Up does what?
We do web application development and hosting for we tend to work with large companies, and we help their IT teams with their project, their web projects.
So your clients can be anywhere because
yes,
they could be in France for
yes.
that matter. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So so you're living in Indiana and you're looking around and thinking, we should do a Bastille Day celebration here. How did that
exactly.
happen?
Well,
actually, you did, obviously.
Actually, what happened was Gabrielle was feeling homesick and wanted our kids to experience what Bastille Day would be like in France. We always typically missed Bastille Day over in France. So I said, well, you know, it's right after 4th of July. I'm sure fireworks are going to be really cheap. Why don't we throw a few fireworks in the front yard? And lo and behold, we had 50, 60 people show up in our front yard. And this was 7 years ago to celebrate Bastille Day. So we moved it into the park the next year. And every year, the attendance has doubled and doubled and doubled. We think it's probably one of the fastest growing cultural events in central Indiana right now.
And you probably get a lot of people who are, as we were talking about a few minutes ago, like, help me. I remember it has something to do with French Revolution, but exactly what I don't remember. So you get a chance to do a little education as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, along with the festival, we will have people coming in costume. There should be some period appropriate costume people acting out some of the scenes from that time in France and some time periods around that as well.
Carol, how did you get involved?
Coven and Gabrielle and I have been friends for 10 years now, and I work with them as well. So I've been with the company for 7 years. And as we started to grow the event, I tend to be a joiner. So it's like, hey, how can I help? And the three of us have been putting on by ourselves for the most part for the first 5 years, the event. And now we've got a team of people that have stepped in from the community that's really helping out and helping us grow quickly and getting new ideas and fresh things going on.
And getting the word out. I imagine Alliance Française and,
yes.
and the International Center are great partners in that.
Mm-hmm. WFYI.
Yeah, and WFYI, that's right. We're revolutionary here, what can I say? So the event is free. It's on the 11th from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. Got a lot of 11s in there. All ages family friendly?
things for little kids to do?
Oh, absolutely. Very family friendly. We'll have a face painting for the little ones. We'll have also a pétanque tournament where everybody can really play.
Explain that sport.
It's like the French version of bocce ball, where you throw a little, what's called piglet, a little ball, and then with your metal balls, you're trying to get as close as possible to that piglet.
So some lessons in how to do this.
Yes. So we'll have that, and we'll have a lot of entertainment in the sense of we'll have marionettes, we'll have dance and live singing, we'll have a big arts and crafts market organized by Carol. We'll have a waiter's race.
Tell us about the waiter's race. I'm intrigued by this.
This is a French tradition that started at the beginning of last century in Europe, really. And it was picked up by the waiters in Paris to try and bring more cachet to their profession. So basically, it's a race where professional waiters are asked to carry their tray without dropping anything around a specific parkour. And we're carrying this to the Indiana Bastille Day as part of an international now competition.
Oh, cool.
And so we held the first one last year, and it was really a blast.
Yeah, the people race around the block. It's about a half-mile course, and they have the full, with their aprons on and the tray with two bottles of Perrier and a couple glasses on it.
I don't think I'd make it 10 feet, let alone half a mile. That's crazy. And did more than one person successfully complete the course last year?
I think they all successfully completed, but there were definitely varying ranges in time, completion times.
Sure. Yes.
But they're escorted around the block by the local police department, so it really feels like they've got a pace car and the full effect of a race.
I love that. So I was listening online to one of your bands. Tell me the name of one of your bands, French Axe, just cracks me up, and it's AXE. And band Guinguette Revival?
Oh, Guinguette Revival.
Guinguette Revival?
Yeah, so French Axe is a band that was formed a few years ago in Cincinnati. And their lead singer is actually a Frenchman who's been living in Cincinnati for 20, 30 years. And he has a little boutique filled with French items to buy, linen and such. And he and his friends started this band, which brings a lot of jazzy and world music together, and it's all authentic, and he sings in French, and it's just like perfect. It captures the essence of a folk festival like Bastille Day.
Fun. Very fun. You were talking a little bit about your arts and crafts activities, and I love the paint in the park mm-hmm. aspect of this. Can we hear about that?
Yes, this is typically organized by 10 West, which is a center for the arts and youth in Fortville. And basically, there's an instructor there that shows on canvas and helps like children and adults create like a really nice painting on canvas over maybe 10 to 15 minutes. And it usually ties in with the French theme they usually paint like an Eiffel Tower or an Arc de Triomphe or some sort of French icon. And the festival is all about enjoying your time and joie de vivre. And so it just fits in perfectly. It's time to relax and just take some time out of your busy life to just sit down, grab a pencil and a brush and start just becoming an artist.
Just relax and see where it leads you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Calvin, you guys have been married how long?
We've been together how long, I should say? Well, we've been together for 16 years. And so we've been married for, I guess, 15 and 14, depending on which date you go by.
Married in France and married here?
Married in Las Vegas and then married here in Indiana.
Love it. Love it. Have you learned something? Obviously, you're pretty steeped in French life being married to a French woman. But in the process of putting this festival on, what have you learned new about the French people or French celebrations that you maybe didn't quite have your mind wrapped around before?
I definitely have a lot of experience with the French culture since we've been together for so long. Actually, the company where we met had a lot of French people as well. And I didn't know a word of French when I started there. But then I got to know a lot of people who were in the company and learn about the French culture. We've been to Paris during Bastille Day. Mm-hmm. So that actually was before we ever started doing our Bastille Day here in Indiana. And what was really interesting in Paris about Bastille Day there was the fact they have a full military parade down the Champs-Élysées with, you know, led by the president, and you've got all the various divisions of the military who show their arms. And that's not something we actually see here in the United States, I don't think, ever.
I think we kind of de-emphasize the militaristic aspect, yeah.
Which, I mean, it was really a neat cultural display. And then in that evening, there was obviously going to be fireworks. So we went to the Eiffel Tower. And I don't know if you've seen the Eiffel Tower recently, but they've got basically a light show that goes along with the tower itself. And then they shot off fireworks and had it all coordinated to music. So it was really a beautiful celebration.
And that's a little bit of the inspiration for the laser light show you guys do as
right.
well. And you still do fireworks as well?
No, we don't have fireworks.
Switched to laser light show. A little bit easier.
Well, that's kind of what went. The first year we did the fireworks in the front yard. And then the second year we realized how hard it was to actually get fireworks put into a public event with all the insurance and things. And we were just a small event at the time. So I came up with the idea of an alternate, you know, let's do a laser light show. Everyone's kind of had a lot of fireworks leading up to 4th of July. So probably a little burned out maybe on it. And we wanted to be something a little different.
So we now have
had the laser light show for all 6 years. It has been a really, really neat show. If you've never seen a laser light show like this, there's actually some photos up on the website for it. But it is really, really pretty cool. They've got lasers that will shoot out over the crowd. They've got a giant 30-foot screen that they actually project onto as well.
Wow.
With full smoke and everything going on through the whole park. I mean, it's quite a production, neat show.
If you're driving, don't do this, but if you're at a computer or on your phone and want to multitask, you can go to IndianaBastilleDay.com to view that, and we'll remind you of that in just a minute. Carol, you didn't come to the organization of this Bastille Day event with, or maybe you did. Did you have a French connection before this, or?
No. I just, being friends and wanting to do something fun and to help Gabrielle celebrate her culture was a motivator behind getting started. And then, you know, hey, what can I help with? And jumping in and taking, mostly I do the vendor and the marketing side of things. So I handle the crafts people and the food vendors, get them all organized, get them all signed up, get them all allotted, help work with our electrical team to make sure everybody's got power, nobody runs out of anything, and off we go.
That logistics piece is a big job.
It is. It is. But it's fun. It keeps me busy.
Favorite moment of the Bastille Day celebration, each of you?
We'll let Gabrielle go first.
All right. No pressure.
Authentic French person here.
Well, I mean, I love watching the marionette shows. Just marionettes are such a core and old cultural piece of France. I love the reenactments. I think the lantern parade at dusk is definitely something that is also always a big tradition attached to Bastille Day in France. And so seeing all those little kids holding their candle-lit lanterns go around the park while listening to the French national anthem is really, like, adorable and really pretty.
And the children get to help make those lanterns beforehand.
Yes, they do. We show them how to make them, and they take time selecting their paper and, like, you know, like fixing the branch on the stick onto the lantern. It's cute. It's a beautiful tradition, and it's great to bring it here to Central Indiana.
Absolutely. Calvin, favorite moment?
Probably one of my favorite moments each year has been as we lead the kids out to the field for the laser light show, just looking at the large group of people we've all amassed to celebrate a French cultural event as we kind of prepare and sit down and get ready for the laser light show to start. That always, you know, gives me goosebumps and kind of, you know, gives me that special feeling that we created something that has hopefully enriched other people's lives and brought them some kind of new experience or new family tradition. I've heard a lot of people say now that they have a new family tradition each year that they will bring their kids to every year that they can.
That's fantastic. Carol, favorite moment?
Yeah, I think I have to agree with the lantern procession. It's really beautiful, and the kids get so excited about it. I think ultimate favorite moment is Calvin getting tased, but That won't happen again, he's promised. So, but yeah, we've had a volunteer every year to get tased by the local police.
Oh.
Yeah, last year I surprised Gabrielle. I just told her, I said, be at the field at this time and don't ask any more questions.
Well, I was hoping there wasn't any violence at the celebration, but now I know. Wow.
Yeah, well, the local fire department and the local police department come in and do demonstrations and bring their dogs and talk to the kids. And the kids are so excited and they learn so much and they learn not to be afraid and who they should talk to and how they can, you know, they put out fires and they do all kinds of cool stuff. So those demonstrations are really important.
Absolutely.
As for kids to learn and to be educated. And that's all part of everything that we're doing is, you know, a teachable moment within a festival.
Yeah, and we've been trying to really bring the Hoosier and the French cultural themes to this festival. It's really important to us that it's not just a French festival. It's really a celebration of the mix of the two cultures together. So at the we're going to have so wine, beer, and cider garden, and all the beer is local craft from local craft breweries.
Yeah, typically we get newer breweries who have just started up so they can actually come out and showcase some of their, you know, their first brews that they've put together. We've been received really, really well. And again, it was really important to me, being a native Hoosier from Indiana, that we were celebrating both cultures, since it is a combination of the two of us, you know, my wife being French and me being from Indiana, that we actually celebrate this Hoosier and French connection. I mean, again, the roots of French culture in Indiana go way back to before Indiana was even a state. You'll notice some of the cities have French names that we horribly mispronounce, but they are because of the French trappers who were here at the time of the Bastille storming happening in France.
Sharon Gamble with Gabrielle Hendricks-Parker, Calvin Hendricks-Parker, and Carol Gans. They're the chief organizers of Indiana Bastille Day, which is celebrated on July 11th from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. in Landmark Park in Fortville. Of course, Bastille Day is really on the 14th, but that's the day they celebrate it here because it's the closest Saturday. The family-friendly event is free, and you can learn more at IndianaBastilleDay.com. Again, IndianaBastilleDay.com.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
Where's my cake?
Happy birthday,
Thank
Sharon.
Thank you. Aww. Chocolate cake. There should be chocolate cake to go with our calendar of things, besides celebrating my birthday. That calendar we call
What Do We Do
for Sharon's birthday weekend?
Yes. Woo-hoo. There's so much going on. How are you celebrating?
Well, there are so many things to see and do. One of the things I'm going to do is see the world premiere musical La Casa Azul, which is Gregory Hancock Dance Theater's brand new project. Well, I say brand new, but if you heard my conversation with him a few weeks ago, this was percolating for about two decades in his life, his imagination, and he wrote words, music, and of course did the choreography and stage movement, et cetera, et cetera.
This is all about Frida Kahlo, right?
It's all about Frida Kahlo and her tempestuous relationship with Diego Rivera. So very interesting stuff. You can find out more by Googling Gregory Hancock Dance Theater or going online to GregoryHancockDanceTheater.org. La Casa Azul, the Blue House. Find out more about that.
That should be great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, speaking of interviews we've done recently for things that are going on this weekend, Installation Nation, presented by Primary Colors at the Indianapolis Arts Center, has its opening night from 6 to 10 on Friday the 26th and then continues on for the next couple weeks. And you can swing by the Arts Center anytime. It's outdoors in their Arts Park, and it's free, and it's worth checking out all the different cool installations created for the Arts Park, as well as some created by students in addition to the professional artists out there. Begin. Opening night is Friday from 6 to 10.
Fantastic. Hey, just a few chances left to see the Green Day musical American Idiot. If you like Green Day's music, when you hear it on the radio, you're going to love this musical, which actually has no spoken dialogue. It's kind of like
a opera.
I know, like a rock opera, exactly. Although I hesitate to say that word because it truly rocks. It has really nothing to do with classical music. But in the sense that the story moves forward just on the force of the songs, really fascinating stuff. Big cast, 12 people on stage at the Phoenix, and that plays through July 5th. But tickets are going fast, so go to phoenixtheater.org and check that out soon.
I keep hearing great things about that show. Mm-hmm. Hey, a big event going on this weekend, art, food, music, and family fun. It's the Indian Market and Festival at the Idle Jorg Museum of American Indians and Western Art, going on all day Saturday and Sunday. Always worth checking out to see the great fairs and festivals and performances, and just enjoy the day with your family out at the Idle Jorg.
And the comedy troupe 1491.
Oh, there we go.
Highlight this year. Hey, so there's no place like home. There's no place like home. If you go to the Friday late night show at Comedy Sports, Indianapolis, and just one more chance, if you're hearing us Thursday night, you can do this because their June late night show is Oz Unscripted, which takes the audience on the traditional story of the Wizard of Oz, but based on some suggestions to mix it up a little bit. It's an adults only show. It's the 10 o'clock Friday night show at Comedy Sports on Mass Ave. So don't bend that rule at all. Adults only, please.
Don't bend that rule. Hey, last weekend ago, check out The Water Show. It's a juried group exhibition at Gallery 924. That's the Arts Council's gallery on Pennsylvania Street at 924. And it's a really interesting show that looks at water supplies and sort of the way that art has traditionally depicted water and what that means. And this show is worth checking out before it drips away.
Oh, my goodness. You did not say that.
I did.
I love it. I love it. Hey, for people who like ribs.
And who doesn't?
You know, there's a certain art to making barbecued ribs. Mm-hmm. Where am I going with this? Hendricks County Rib Fest this Saturday at 4 o'clock at Washington Township Park in Avon. Finger licking good local ribs and sauces, plus games, live music, fireworks, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So gather up the family. That's family friendly fun this Saturday afternoon at 4 in Avon at Washington Township Park.
And all weekend long, Symphony on the Prairie at Connor Prairie. This weekend, it is Pictures at an Exhibition.
Ooh.
Yeah, which is just a great piece of music. And it should be a lovely weekend out on the Symphony at the Prairie. On the Prairie with the Symphony. There you go. Sharon, you want to wrap this up?
I love it. Yeah, wait, I feel like I'm caught in a world I never made there. Here's something that isn't happening yet, but these tickets are going to go very fast, too. Love, Loss, and What I Wore, opening July 10th at Theater on the Stage, Theater on the Square, Stage 2. A really fun, funny, and poignant meditation on women and their relationship to their clothes. I've been at performances where guys come to. In fact, it's a good chance for guys to understand what is going on with the woman in my life and her closet. Love, Loss, and What I Wore at TOTS, TOTS.org for more info.
That sounds good. Well, you can always learn more about local arts events at indiearts.org/guide. That's the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide website, indiearts.org/guide. Or listen to us next weekend on that calendar that we call
What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
The Indianapolis Early Music is America's oldest continuous presenter of early music. Their 49th festival kicked off last week and continues through July 12th. Travis DiNicola spoke with board member Lolly Ramey about the festival.
Lolly, welcome to Art of the Matter. It's awesome to have you in the studio and sort of on the other side of the studio that I get to interview you.
Thank you, Travis. It's really nice to be here with you today.
Yeah. Well, of course, a lot of people are going to recognize your name and voice for the work that you do here at WFYI. Tell us about that real quick for a minute, and then we'll talk about the Early Music Festival.
Well, I started out here, I think it was in 2000, and mm-hmm. I started out as a volunteer for the Pledge Drive. And then I evolved to, they hired me to do some classical music work for a time.
Yeah.
And Then I went part-time, very, very part-time, and about six and a half years ago now, I said to the manager, you know, I've always wished I could have a classical request program.
Yeah.
And he didn't even blink, and he said, okay, you want to volunteer it? So I've been volunteering classics by request ever since.
Which is awesome.
I love doing it. It's a great program.
And I know you do. You can really tell that you enjoy doing it.
I just love it.
Yeah. Well, it's so nice to have you on Art of the Matter today. And and of course, I mean, you have a great knowledge of classical music, and you're on the board of Indianapolis Early Music, which is a great organization. Let's start off by, before we talk about the festival that's actually already started and is going on right now, tell me a bit about the organization.
The organization of the Indianapolis Early Music started, now get this, almost 50 years ago.
Yeah, this is the 49th season.
And it is the longest running, consecutively running, early music festival in the country.
That's really cool.
It's something to be very, very proud of.
Yeah.
And it has presented early music, which by definition is music pretty much before 1800. It could be Baroque, it could be Renaissance, it could be instrumental, it could be vocal. And the early music musicians, somebody asked me yesterday, are they based in Indianapolis? No.
Right, they're from all over the world.
All over the world.
Yeah.
I think next year there's a group coming from Paris. It's very well thought of in early music circles across the country and the world. And we have some fantastic guests coming in again this year.
Well, let's talk for a moment. I want to get back to just the sort of the definition of early music. So pretty much before 1800, is there a start date? Or it's who knows? It sort of goes back, I guess, to whatever you find the music. And
that's a very good question. And I don't know the answer to that. What would define?
Yeah, how far back can you go?
Early music.
But it's basically, it's music that often is played on instruments that, well, of course, traditional at the time, but may be a little different than what we're used to now.
Very definitely. There is the family of viols, V-I-O-L-S, which were the predecessors of the violins family. The recorders are used a great deal, and the concerts this past weekend were surrounding the guest artist, Matthias Mauta, who is a recorder artist.
And a recorder being that instrument that most of us learned how to play in fourth grade, and it's still pretty cool.
It is cool. And that instrument is used a great deal, variations of the recorder. There are guitars. There are lutes. There are, what was it I heard our director call a plucker, somebody who plays an instrument that is with strings. And the sound is often very different because of the nature of the instruments being much, much older. There is a lower volume, typically, a more intimate sound, a sound that does not have a lot of vibrato, typically. Even the voices very often will have quite a straight tone. Not always, but a straight tone. And to hear all these instruments and voices blend with a straight tone, usually in a more intimate setting, like we are presenting.
Because that's an important part of this. I mean, that's how the music was originally heard, of course.
Truly.
Yeah. Truly. You know, I will mention that if people are interested, the Indianapolis Star had a great feature in their arts section about 2 weeks ago, looking at all the different instruments that are part of some of the groups that are playing in this year's Early Music Festival. And definitely worth checking out. I'm sure you can find that online. But it really is kind of fascinating. I mean, it's not just the music itself, but as you say, the sounds are different, the instruments are different. There's a different feel to early music.
Oh, totally different feel. It's very, very intimate is a good word, because the setting is typically smaller. The musicians may have been performing in somebody's home. It could have been in a court situation. Very often it's a small ensemble. this weekend's group was, let's see.
Well, now, all the concerts for the festival that is going on right now, as I mentioned, take place at the Basile Theater at the Glick Indiana History Center, which is a lovely space, great acoustics, and fairly intimate there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
A good place to hear music like this.
Mm-hmm. And the intimacy of the presentation of the music goes along with how the Festival Music Society, which was the first name mm-hmm. of the Indianapolis Early Music Festival. The Festival Music Society always had a really wonderful board-presented reception after the concerts, and we do that now. So after each of the concerts, we of the board prepare and bring and pitch in to have a reception with very often their... Most of the time, there is some wine, there's lemonade, there's water to drink, and beautiful munchies and fruit and cheese and crackers and you name it, finger food for the most part.
It's social then as well.
It's very social, and the audience gets to mingle with the guest artists.
Which is really, really nice.
It's wonderful.
Let's talk about some of the upcoming concerts. As I said, the festival's already been going on for over a week now, but continues on through July 12th, and there are a number of concerts between now and then, including this weekend, both Friday night, Nell Snedus, and then there's a family concert on Saturday, the 27th.
Oh, I've got to tell you about that.
Yeah, please do. That's at 11 o'clock in the morning, free family concert.
On Saturday. It is free. It is at the Indiana History Center.
Mm-hmm.
It is a wonderful opportunity for families to come and introduce children to early music, because typically they won't get this kind of an education. And so bring the family down, come on and talk to the musicians, and join us for the free family concert.
Now, who will be performing that day? Or it's a mix of different people here for the festival?
I don't know who's performing.
Well, it's a surprise.
For that, it is a surprise. But Sunday afternoon is at 4 o'clock.
Okay.
So we want to make sure that everybody has those times. Sunday, June the 28th, the Rose Ensemble will be performing, and they were founded in 1996 in St. Paul, Minnesota, and they perform vocal music and instrumental music, all in ensemble, and their press material says that each performance illuminates centuries of rarely heard repertoire, bringing to modern audiences research from the world's manuscript libraries and fresh perspectives on history, languages, politics, religion, and world cultures.
That's quite a lot.
That is quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the Rose Ensemble, based out of St. Paul, Minnesota.
Each of these shows people can buy individual tickets for.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
You can go to emindy.org or call 317-577-9731 for tickets.
There's the number.
So tell me about some of the other performers that are coming up.
I've got to tell you that I'm very excited about the third weekend. And people say, oh, this festival doesn't go throughout the year. No, it's three weekends.
And always sort of mid-June through early July.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So we have this coming weekend, June 26th, 27th, 28th.
Mm-hmm.
That is Friday evening. Saturday morning is the free concert. Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock. Then we skip a weekend for the 4th of July.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And we have July the 10th is Trio Settecento and guests.
Mm-hmm.
And Rachel Barton Pine is a gifted violinist. She plays in Trio Settecento. She plays the Baroque violin and the Viola d'Amore. She's with John Mark Rosendahl, who plays the Viola da Gamba and the Baroque cello, and David Schrader, who is on harpsichord, positif organ, and the fortepiano. Then they will also have as special guests David Douglas on the Baroque violin and Ellen Hargis, soprano. That is going to be a wonderful concert.
That sounds great.
And I've played Rachel Barton Pine on my program. I love her playing. She has quite a story to tell. Are you familiar with her story?
Not really, no.
She is a stunningly beautiful young gal, and there was a terrible accident in which I think the story goes that she was in the New York subway, and I think it was a violin case strap that got caught in the subway door and evidently dragged her, and she lost a limb in that accident. But here she is, out performing. She's beautiful. She's vibrant. She's extraordinarily talented and very, very broad in her approach to music. Here she's playing early music in many recordings that I've played and heard. She's doing Beethoven or other composers in the more classical realm.
Excellent.
So she's going to also be with Viva Vivaldi III. That is on Sunday, July the 12th. And that is Rachel Barton Pine and the Indianapolis Baroque Orchestra. So that one is going to be very
exciting. That's a great concert and a great one to finish up the festival with.
Yes.
Lolly, thank you so much for coming in today to Art of the Matter. Before I let you go, though, I want to ask you to remind our listeners when they can listen to your show, Classics by Request.
Oh, thank you, Travis.
Yeah.
I'm on Friday evenings, I guess Friday nights, at 10 o'clock, right here on 90.1.
Lolly Rainey, thank you so much for coming into Art of the Matter Day. It's a
Travis,
pleasure.
Travis, thank you for having me.
Travis DiNicola with Indianapolis Early Music board member Lolly Rainey. The Indianapolis Early Music Festival continues through July 12th with all concerts at the Basile Theater at the Glick Indiana History Center. For more information, visit emindy.org, emindy.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I'll chat with Matthew Kramer of the Indianapolis Chamber Orchestra and also find out about this year's Indie Jazz Fest. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call.
What'll we do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.